Well, good morning to you. I appreciate you being here. Quick couple of things before we dive into a couple of other things, I guess. First off, this week, if you didn't know, Easter's next weekend. If you didn't know, we should probably talk afterwards and get you out of the cave you're living in. But Easter's coming up this coming week. And I just want to let you know how we'll roll with that weekend. On Friday, we don't have a kind of a traditional kind of a Good Friday gathering where we have teaching, worship, communion, those kind of things. What we do instead is we actually have the whole day set aside where this room is made available. So this we'd clear out all the chairs. And it's not, if you've been around church for a little while, it's not like a Stations of the Cross type thing. But what we've done is we put together a kind of a process that you can come to this room at any time between 6 a.m. and 8 p.m. by yourself, with a spouse, with roommates, friends, your full family, whatever you want, and take as long as you want, and come through kind of a guided time of scripture reading and kind of prayer and reflection, and it all kind of culminates on you working your way around the room here, culminates with you remembering Christ through communion and the giving of the body of his blood. So that the space is open. So some in the past, some parents have like swapped with kids and come individually. Some families come in by as a whole family, single people, work people, whatever, you come in. I don't know what work people is, but you know what I'm talking about. And then, so that's open all day Friday, 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. Come and just take your time and walk through that anytime you want. I would say this, I haven't said this at the other, I missed this earlier, but it would probably take you about 30 minutes to kind of go through the process we put in place, but you could take an hour and 30 minutes, 2.5 hours, or go through in 15 minutes. It's just up to you and your timing. So come and remember that on Friday. And then Sunday is Easter. We are not adjusting our gathering times. So it's still 8:30, 10, 11:30. We will be putting more chairs in. So my encouragement to you is maybe come a little bit early. Please don't come to 10. Come to this one. Or 8:30, although whatever. Just come early. Or the normal, maybe, because everybody tends to come. And so it'll be fun, it'll be great, but the gathering times are the same. Good? Okay, so here's the next thing I want to do. I want to bring up Mary Marino here. Aaron, you have to stay there, even though I value you as a human being, as a friend. I want to introduce you to Aaron Marino, Mary Marino. This is Mary Marino, Aaron's wife. Aaron and Mary came to the church a few years back, but Mary has been kind of in a paid role for about 3 years here at Colossae. And every once in a while, I want to now start bringing up some people from our staff, because you see some of us a lot, like myself and John and Jeff, and you see Ali Kinneman up here from time to time, announcements, baptisms, whatever. But there are people on our staff that are such core staff members that you never see unless we tell you what to do. And so I thought from time to time, I want to bring up people like Mary, have them stand here, feel a little awkward for a few minutes while I talk about them and explain to you what they do. Because I feel like it's important for you to know how much of the backbone to everything we do Mary actually is. I'll just kind of walk through some of her. I actually literally had to like think through all that she does, and I kind of wrote it out because I was going to forget some. One of the main things that takes up most of her time is she handles all of the finance for our church. So that's all three locations, Tigard, Hillsborough, and Sherwood. She also oversees all of the finance for Well and Good, the coffee shop. She also oversees all of the finance for the church planting network that we have under 501c3 that I started, that we're pooling money together with these churches to help plant more churches. She oversees the finances of all of that. And let me just say, the finances are not getting less complex here to make sure it's done above board and correctly. And again, most of that is because I tend to have a lot of ideas, But thankfully, Mary likes that, and so we've worked really well together, and so she's able to create structures. She also, financial and just accountability with that stuff, she also handles all HR, kind of human resource type of things. So that includes people, things like our medical dental insurance for our employees. It includes building insurances, which is really complex sometimes when it comes to commercial real estate, like we lease here. She handles like job descriptions. She helped our elders, actually guided our elders in many ways right through our pay structure. We structure our pay based on the school district and how the school district pays teachers. So that's how we pay. That's how we kind of, we have this, what do we call it? Scale. Thank you. And I can think through a lot of this stuff as well, but she's a powerhouse with this kind of stuff. And so as we've talked about this stuff, she helps with all of that HR stuff. She also does all of our corporate filing. She does state stuff, corporate stuff, which all the things that nobody ever thinks about that needs to be done that I used to do, now she does it, which is way better, I promise. I did it not wrong, but she does it right, if that makes sense. So she does all of that. Also, you should know this. Mary has been a huge resource to me personally when it comes to staffing and organizing our staff. So since the Newman's House, when we first started gathering with 9 adults, we pooled our money together because we literally believed we could do more together than we can individually. We still do that together. That numbers are different now, which is why we have people like Mary, powerhouse lady here that can actually structure all that. But when it comes to like managing and stewarding the finances that we all give to, we want to make sure that's used in the best way possible. And a lot of that has to do with staffing. So when I've had ideas of who to staff and how to move things around, Mary's the first person I've gone to. She's the person that I go to and say, Mary, here's what I'm thinking. What do you think about this? And she goes, no, you're an idiot. She says a little nicer than that, but it's like, actually, that's not the best idea. Here's maybe something we can do. She's a very good thinker through all of that stuff. And she has her own ideas too, where she's thinking through stuff and says, hey, what if we did this? And so as we've been growing that type of movement, she's been a huge resource to me and to our elders. She's guided our elders through a number of different things. And lastly, and this is why I'm taking so much time, because I want you to know really how much people do around here that you never hear about. She also has a huge role in our staff. Even from helping our pastors with their taxes, which is pretty complex if you're a pastor, and have that status in our country, you fall under this very unique system, and it's really complex, and Mary's helping through that. All of our staff goes to her for a number of different things. But for instance, I went on sabbatical this summer, and when I went on sabbatical, I came back, and Mary's actually, I think, the first person that I talked to about this. I said, look, you know, when one of my kids goes away on a sleepover, the entire dynamics of my home changes, right? You parents understand that? Like, everything changes in your home. And so I said, you know, me being gone from our staff for 7-8 weeks here, imagine some things changed. So what changed for the better? What are some of the things that changed, that's really healthy change since I've been gone, that I don't want to re-enter and disrupt? And she didn't say it, but other people said, Mary should run the staff meetings. So I'm like, okay, awesome. And what, awesome. So, okay, I suck at that. So I don't think I totally sucked, but what happens is Mary, like, she keeps it on track. She slots a little time for me to kind of, anything I want to share or whatever. It's a way of her controlling what I say, probably. But Mary is just a huge resource. And let me just say this. Whether you realize it or not, you are really, really thankful for her. Our staff is. Our elders are. She's had a huge role in our church. So I wanted you to know her. So this is Mary Marino. Full-time with us. She works extremely hard at what she does, and we live in gratefulness to her. We use her in huge ways, lean on her for a ton, And so we're really thankful for her. Now, that leads me into more of our discussion today. Over the last few weeks, we've been talking about the household. And today we'll finish up the series on that. But we've been talking about the household like a relational, with a relational focus. Whether you're single or married, we've been talking about that. If you missed the last couple weeks, at least listen to last week, or you can hear our message about that and hear from my friend Gordon, who you all heard from and I think we're blessed by last week if you were here. Listen back to that. Today, when we talk about the household, I want to talk about how does the household flow out into the world. Now, when we think about that, we talk about that, the household flows out in a number of different ways. One is if you have kids in school, so they're friends' parents, there's teachers, there's administrators. If your kids, if there's sporting activities, certainly with your kids, you're dealing with coaches and parents. But even as adults, if we're involved in sporting indoor soccer or something, we have these kind of relational outlets, even with neighbors, coworkers, those kinds of things in a relational focus. There's a number of different ways that the household flows out. But today I want to talk about work and this little thing we make by working called money. Now, today I want to look at a number of different passages. We're going to be in Genesis 2 and 3. We're going to be in Colossians 3 and Ephesians 4. And I want to, if you're a note taker, maybe you just write those down. You can turn to all of those or not. I'm going to walk through them pretty quickly, but I'll put them all on the screen for you. But today I want to talk about this because work is really way more important than oftentimes in the church we give it credit for. Work does not define who you are, but it is what you do, and so it's important. It's really, really important. And sometimes it kind of gets a bad rap. For instance, like we tend to think of work as a curse. It's burdensome, and it's a curse. But let me start off this conversation with a question. Question would be this, why work? Like, many of us would be like, wow, it would be nice if I didn't have to work. Would you agree? But why work? Like, what is the purpose of working? And many people, again, think like, I wish it wasn't a work, but or I didn't have to work because it's a curse. It's burdensome. It's laborious. It's a hard thing to have to do. And if we could be financially independent, I just would stop working. But here's one thing I want to make sure we understand going into this topic is this, is when God created a perfect world, we know that as the Garden of Eden. And God puts man into the garden in this perfect kind of ideal setting and environment. In fact, if you go into old temples or even older churches today, what's the imagery of? The tent, the garden. It's always a callback to this ideal, perfect environment that human beings are placed into. And I think it's really important to understand this. People worked. Work was part of the perfect environment. In fact, Genesis 2 says this. The Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden. So man was created outside of the Garden of Eden. We don't really know where that is. But then God sets up this perfect environment and puts man into it to what? Work it and keep it. So work is actually part of God's design and wiring of mankind. Work is not a curse. In fact, it's better if you see this, you actually have the idea of human beings actually having to work and do stuff to eat. Right? Isn't that why you work? You earn money to eat, supply your needs and benefit. It's a garden. It's a God's wiring thing. It's way better to think about work as a humanly activity than a curse. Because in the perfect world, it was there. Now, here's the reality, okay? We don't live in the garden anymore, right? I hope that's not a Santa Claus experience for you. But we don't live in the garden, right? And so work is burdensome. It is laborious. It is stressful. There is a lot, and most people don't love what they do. I don't even like everything I do. Right? We're outside of the garden, and it's a lot of work, which is exactly what God said would happen. The very next chapter, after human beings said, you know, we know better than you do, essentially, this is what God says to them after they go outside of his design. By the sweat of your face, you shall eat bread. Till you return to the ground, for out of it you were taken, for you are dust, and to dust you shall return. In other words, I created you to work. And now that you've gone outside of my design, by the sweat of your face, you're going to need to work to eat. It's going to take a lot of effort. It's going to be burdensome now. This was your choice. It's going to be stressful. We know that. We feel that. We experience that. We have to live in that stress to the point where we would say, man, if I didn't have to work anymore, I wouldn't. Even though it's part of your God-given wiring to work and to do stuff. And I'm even talking about stay-at-home moms. You know, my wife stays home. We've made some sacrifices for that, but we want her to stay home. And I've always said, she works a lot harder than I do. I just happen to make more money. So it includes everybody, but we're wired to work. We're creative beings. We're wired to do stuff, to build stuff, to create stuff, and to work with our hearts and minds. And yet sometimes we're stuck in a job that we hate, or our job or our boss is, we would say, is a total tool. Right? And we get stuck in this place and we're like, what am I doing? And it's so laborious. It's so burdensome. We view it as a curse and we have a really hard time finding any amount of redemptive value in our work. And so we start talking about, well, maybe I should go into ministry. Maybe I should do this. And we're these spreadsheets and this cubicle or this job or this person or whatever. It's just burdensome. Well, here's what I hope would happen today. I hope that today that you can rethink your work in a little different way through some scriptures that would bring some redemptive value to it. In fact, I believe as Christians, we really need to think more deeply about why we work and why we pursue it, to find some redemptive value. And so here's what I would say. I would say that we need a redemptive mindset and we need redemptive motivations. And I want to walk through each of those things. So we're going to be in Colossians 3 for a few minutes here. In Colossians 3, Paul gives us some insight. He's talking about the household. He's talked about wives. He's talked about husbands. He's talked about children. And then in verse 22 of chapter 3 of the book of Colossians, he goes into the marketplace, the workforce. Here's what he says. Bond servants. Now, that term would have included slaves. Okay, some of them were enslaved and forced to work, but not all of them. It's really the idea of employee. Slavery back then wasn't totally, it's kind of apples and oranges in some ways. It's not like slavery in our country where the civil rights movement was what came out of. It's different. Slavery, the people just worked, and so that's a way that's like, I'll be your slave. You tell me what to do, you're my boss, so that I can get paid. It's called employment, right? So it would have included people that were enslaved, but it was all slaves or all employees. This is what Paul says. Obey in everything those who are your earthly masters or your boss or employer, not by way of eye service as people pleasers, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. So what you have here is people, right? Many of them were enslaved by the Roman Empire. Clearly not loving what they're doing. And Paul brings in this bigger picture, some redemptive value to what they're doing. He says, look, as a follower of Jesus, do this, not in lip service or in a way that just pleases your boss, but with your heart. Like, give the core of your being to what you are doing. Why? Because it's fearing the Lord. It's a reverential respect for Jesus. And so in this setting, he's saying there's redemptive value in what you're doing because you're not actually doing it for yourself. You're not doing it for your master or your job, your boss. You're actually doing it for Jesus. And he goes on further. It's this relational feel to it. He says, whatever you do, work heartily. Give the core of your being to this task. as for the Lord and not for men, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the inheritance as your reward, you are serving the Lord Christ. And so what Paul is doing is he's calling back to this garden-like mentality. In the garden, there was work. Work was not a curse. It's part of our wiring. It's a humanly activity. The beautiful aspect of work in the garden was is that people were doing it in relationship with God. And this is what Paul's talking about. Regardless of your task, regardless of your position, you're doing it in relationship with Jesus and for him, and that is the redemptive value. Now, some people will be like, well, you know, Chuck, you don't know what I have to do, man. I'm like at rock bottom. I have no influence on anybody. We talk about building relationships with coworkers. I don't even work with anybody. I can't even talk to anybody. If I do, I get busted for it or whatever. I'm in the mailroom or I'm just doing spreadsheets. Or we have all of these kinds of thoughts that if I could just get to the top level of this organization, I could have higher influence. And that might be true, but here's the deal. The only job you can start from the top is digging a hole. That's it. Every other job, you're going to start somewhere below the top, right? The point is not your position or power or influence. The point is your mindset and who are we doing this for? This is where Paul is getting us to go to. I hear people all the time like, and I know it's hard because we complain about our boss or whatever. We can get frustrated. But Chris Newman is one of our elders. He's been an elder since close to the beginning of our church plant here. And Chris says this phrase. He said it probably, I don't know, 4, 5, 6 times over the last 8 years that I've heard him say it. And he says this. He says, I have done pretty well for myself by just doing what my boss tells me to do and being content with that. I've done really well in my career because I just do what my boss tells me to do and I'm content with that and I just work as hard as I can at what he's told me to do or she's told me to do. That's called wisdom. That's called this mentality. That's what we want an elder to say. That's what we want him to say. One of our other elders right now, he's, you know, later in life, towards the end of his career, and some things happen, and now he has to travel a bunch. He hates it. He hates it. But he's like, well, this is what the Lord has me doing. I'm going to have to fight through that, figure that out, but I'm going to do it with everything I got. This is what you want godly people to say. There's wisdom in this. Now, whatever the role is, whatever we're doing, we're doing it not for our boss or for ourselves, but we're doing it as if Jesus is right beside us and we're doing it for him. This is where redemptive thinking can come into play. And the inward battle of that is really difficult. There's emotions in there and all that. But with God's help, we can have a redemptive mindset about our work and what we're doing. The other thing is, not just a redemptive mindset, but kind of redemptive motivations when we think about why do I pursue working? Sure, yes, of course, it's important to meet your own needs and maybe your family, support your family, whatever. But there has to be something more because as I read scripture, everything is about not focusing on myself. So what is it? Is there something else beyond ourselves as to why we work? I think Paul gives us some really good insight into this in a different letter, not to the church of Colossae, which would be a cool name for a church, but to the church of Ephesus, which is not as cool of a name for a church. But if you go to the book of Ephesians, the flow of thought that Paul uses for these people is very unique. You have six chapters in the book of Ephesians. The first three are very, very simple. Paul's basically saying, this is who God says you are. This is who he says you are. And then chapters 4 through 6, very simple. Basically, this is how you live out the identity that God has given you. And so the flow of thought in chapters 4 through 6 is this beautiful kind of progression of thought where he uses this term walk. In chapter 4, verse 1, he says, walk in this way. Chapter 4, verse 17, I don't want you to walk as if you're not God's children. That doesn't make any sense. Chapter 5, verse 1, chapter 5, verse 8, chapter 5, verse 15. Walk, 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 walk. It's very practical on living out who we are. But when we get to chapter 4, the very beginning of this progression of thought, he talks about being in unity, and then he starts to flip some things over its head. And he's in this section where he says, look, I don't want you should not walk in a way that suggests you're not one of God's people. And so one of the things he says is this, in verse 28. He says, let the thief no longer steal. Be like, well, here's a good idea. Right? Imagine that. It's not that super spiritual, but a thief takes from others, doesn't give towards others, which violates the call of the gospel. So what he's saying is, this is not about getting from others. This is about something else. And so he says, the thief no longer steal, but rather let him labor doing honest work with his own hands so that, here's the purpose, he may have something to share with anyone in need. Ooh, that sounds familiar to the teachings and life of Jesus, does it not? So what Paul is talking about here is actually something bigger to work than self-indulgence. The reality is most of us don't work to give towards others. We work so we can get what we want and think we need, right? I was looking at all the jobs I've had. Have you ever done that? Have you ever like listed out all the jobs that you've ever had? It was quite awesome. And like looking at this as like 41 years old now, looking at the jobs I've had. Like the first job I had was a paper route. And the reason why I got the paper route was in eighth grade, because I had an eighth grade graduation trip that our school kind of put together in partnership with other things, and we went to Washington, D.C. And I wanted to go on that, and there was no way in the world my mom could afford for me to go on that trip. It was like $900-something. It was so far-fetched. It was crazy. So I got a job to pay for it, and I saved up money, and I was able to actually get some shoes some lunch money and all those kinds of things. And I bought a Nintendo 64. So remember that? Mario Brothers and Duck Hunt? I ended up buying one of those too. But that's not why I got the job. I got it to go on this trip. After that, I got a job at JD's restaurant, which was open from 6 a.m. to 3 p.m. And I was a dishwasher. I was below a busboy. You had to get promoted to busboy. Okay, so I would go actually after school. They would close at 3, and I would show up right after 3. I would go in, and I would start cleaning dishes. It was disgusting, to be frank. And I would go in and out on all the walkways behind the counter and behind where the cooks were and throughout the back kitchen. There was these mats that have these holes in them, you know, perfect for mashed potatoes to get stuck in there and all of that nasty oil stuff. So my job was to go in, pull all of those mats out, take them outside, spray them out, disinfect them, mop up everything, scrub all the grills, all of that. That was my job my freshman year. In high school, I did that 5 days a week after school. Then I got this job stocking men's clothing at Daughtry's department store and did some stuff there. And then I was dating this girl, and my girlfriend's boyfriend, my girlfriend's dad was the butcher, the head butcher at this grocery store called Safeway. Ever hear that? And so he's the guy sharpening knives, cutting stuff up. And I'm like, yeah, I want to go work with that dude. But the thing was, the reason why I wanted the job is because minimum wage was like $4, a little over $4. And as a bagger or courtesy clerk, it's much more professional. At Safeway, minimum, we started at $6.35 an hour. So I'm like, I want that job, right? I want that one. So as I got this job, I was working my tail off. I got promoted to what's called a GMC clerk. I stocked bread and liquor, got promoted to a food clerk, and so basically a checker, and worked my way. I did that through my first year of college, and I was doing in displays. And then I got the job as a manager of frozen and dairy food at this other grocery store called Grocery Outlet. You ever been in one of those? So I was working 3 a.m. to noon, and stocking those things. I worked in termite control during that time. I was in greenhouses. sweating my tail off with rain gear on and gas mask and rubber boots and gloves, spraying pesticides through all of this stuff in greenhouses. I've worked as in a purchasing department for a semiconductor manufacturer known as Lam Research. I did that for a little over a year. I've been a junior high pastor at a church over construction. I've been the director of operations for this insurance company. I did that for a time. I've pastored in a couple of churches. This is hopefully the last one. And I've owned 2 for-profit companies. One folded because of fraud committed against it. One got acquired. We're doing this. I've authored some books. Here's the point. I've done all of these things, and I've worked in all these capacities and have earned money. I've earned money. But why? Well, I have to unfortunately tell you that up until about 9 or 10 years ago, it was really so I can get what I felt like I needed and what I wanted. In other words, here's what I would say to you. Up until about 9 or 10 years ago, I viewed my work as if the most basic teachings of Jesus didn't apply. That the most basic teaching of Jesus didn't apply to where I spent most of my time. If you take Paul's example of working so that, not you can just get what you want and need, although those aren't bad, but so that you can actually give to people in need. And you take statements like this out of Luke chapter 9 when Jesus says this, if anyone would come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow me. Things start to make a little bit of sense, and it's challenging. Jesus is essentially saying, as a follower of me, it's not about you. You have to actually set yourself aside. And it says daily, which then means regardless of your circumstances, you set yourself aside. In other words, it would be like this. It's not like you wait until everything works and you have excess to begin setting yourself aside and focusing on the benefit of others. The term daily suggests that regardless of your situation and circumstances, you focus on God and others. And yet the very thing I was spending the most of my time doing in work, I was living as though that didn't apply because I was earning a wage for myself. What I needed and what I wanted. It's challenging when you think about it. The book of James says, like, true religion is helping widows and orphans. Sure, it takes relationship and time to do that, but it also takes money. Jesus says it's more blessed to give than to receive. Unfortunately, we don't believe that. And it shows in the fact that we work so that we can get what we want and what we need, not, as Paul's saying, as a means. Yes, meet your needs. Get some things you want. That's not bad. But why are you working? Paul says so that you can have something to give when people are in need. In other words, so that you could be generous with yourself. This brings a lot more redemptive value to what we're doing as work. We don't work so that we can give to others. We work so we can get what we want and need. As if the most basic teaching doesn't apply to our work. It does. And there's a massive redemptive value in it. And I find so many people saying, I don't see any redemptive value of what I'm doing at work. Yes, there is. You have to have a redemptive mindset about it. It's bigger than you. You're serving Jesus, not your boss or your organization. And yes, it's bigger than that. There's redemptive activities and motivations. Why are you pursuing more money? Is it for yourself or for others? Well, there's something here. It's a bigger picture of the household of God and the world. If we think about Jesus as king and his kingly ways, we use this term called kingdom. It's basically the ways of Jesus. And so as we look at that, if we throw up kingdom here, we look at God's or Jesus' kingly ways, kingdom ways, going into every domain of society. These are the domains we work in. These are the domains that we spend the majority of our time in. And yes, it takes relationship. Yes, we should build relationships with our peers and coworkers and all of those kinds of things and hopefully be able to show and articulate who we believe Jesus to be in appropriate ways. But there's more to it. We're in these domains of society to earn money so that we can give back and take care of people in need. There's a bigger picture to why what we're doing. I honestly wonder, I honestly often wonder where would the church be in society, like in our culture? What would it be like if we as Christians could actually like keep our complaining self and our complaining mouths shut? And we actually viewed what we're doing as if it was for Jesus and he was by our side. And we therefore gave everything we were to our task. And we did that so that we can get money, and we budgeted ourselves well so that we had money purposefully to give to people in need. Where would the church be in our culture? Frankly, I think it would be a source of power in the culture. If the household of God would operate like that, is it really that simple? I don't think it's much more complex than that. I really think it's that simple. Redemptive mindset, redemptive motivations behind what we do and why we do it. For generosity's sake, not for self-serving's sake. Most basic teachings apply to us in where we spend the most of our time. And I think that's a challenge for all of us, including myself and my wife, but all of us, and as a part of the household of God. Now, everything we do in our lives, right? Certainly parts of our household are going to remain private. Okay? Get that? Got that? But as a whole, the privacy of our home is actually for proclamation. In other words, every aspect of our life is a means of proclaiming what we say we believe. It should be, at least. And the job is just not any different. And right now, we're going to do something publicly. Is when we actually come and we're going to remember the work of Jesus in his life and death and burial and resurrection, where we take the bread and we dip in the juice. And what this represents is the selfless work of Jesus, right? We're remembering his body, his blood on the cross. Who did he go there for? Himself? Certainly wasn't beneficial to him at the time. It was for the sake of others. He is the model. Why do we work? For selfless reasons? Selfish reasons? Perhaps. We have to take care of our own needs and those kinds of things. But he's the model. So it has to be greater than that. There has to be some sort of redemption in this story outside of the garden. I think there can be through kind of asking God to redeem our minds about what we're doing in our jobs, and to redeem what we do with the money we earn from it. I think there's something to be learned here from Jesus in that. So in this time, I'm going to pray, and Marcus will come back up and lead us through this time. If this is your church, you can give in the boxes there too. But what I'd ask you to do is as you take this and remember the selfless work of Jesus, don't you actually ask him to have the Holy Spirit just to give you that same mentality about your work, whether that's a stay-at-home issue, or maybe your work is your schoolwork right now. Maybe it's a job that you actually earn a wage. But you would actually ask so that you can see some redemption through the work of Christ, through the scriptures, and what you do for the most part of your life. Let me pray.